John Swett's first teacher in the forest tradition was Ajahn Fun, who was a student of Ajahn Mun. And Ajahn Fun kept telling Ajahn Swett, "You've got to go study directly with Ajahn Mun." At first, Ajahn Swett didn't see any need. He was perfectly satisfied with his teacher. But he did spend some time with Ajahn Mun. And he said he realized Ajahn Mun was really special. He commented that during his time there, the two Dharma topics that Ajahn Mun stressed again and again were, one, practicing the Dharma in accordance with the Dharma. That phrase comes from the Parinibbana Sutta, when the Buddha describes the best way to pay homage to him. The second one was the customs of the noble ones. Now these two teachings overlap, partially, in the sense that you practice the Dharma not in line with your personal preferences, not in line with the preferences of your culture, but you practice the Dharma as it is. We tend to think of the forest tradition as being quintessentially Thai or Lao. But during Ajahn Mun's life, he was constantly attacked for not doing things in the Thai or the Lao way. His response always was, he wanted to become a noble one. If you want to become a noble one, you have to practice in line with the customs of the noble ones, not in line with the customs of any one particular country, because the customs of the Thais and the Laos and every country in the world are the customs of people with defilements, aimed at keeping families going, keeping lay society going. What it says is that society is domesticated, whereas the Dhamma is not. Remember, the Dhamma was found in the wilderness. The Buddha gained awakening in the wilderness. He passed away in the wilderness. And he was able to bridge the gap between the wilderness and civilization. But his prime inspiration was out in the woods, away from the customs of people in general. I remember when I first encountered the forest tradition, that was one of the first things that struck me. My first ordination had been at a village temple in central Thailand, a total immersion in Thai culture. And after about a month there, someone took me out to stay with Ajahn Fung. It was like stepping outside of Thai culture. I'd been in Thailand for 2 years at that point. I had a strong sense of what Thai values were. And this was definitely something outside. The buildings were plain and simple. But more importantly, the attitude was something that stood outside of Thai society. You might say that it was fundamentalist, in the sense that the forest tradition tried to get back to the original fundamentals without all the cultural accretions that had happened over the centuries. We hear so much about how Buddhism adapts itself to different cultures, and that's part of the wisdom of Buddhism, is being adaptable. But Buddhism doesn't adapt. It gets adapted. And it's not always the case that an adaptation, because it's successful in attracting a lot of people, is actually in line with the Dharma. What Ajahn Mun's vision was to get back to the original principles. You may say fundamentalism is bad. Well, it depends on the fundamentals. If the fundamentals are good, after all, Four Noble Truths, Noble Eightfold Path, Four Establishments of Mindfulness, you're putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. You're getting away from the world. You might say that it's also countercultural. And that's what appealed to me, at least at the time. And the fundamentalism has appealed to me since then, too. But this aspect of, say, the customs of the noble ones, being in line with the idea that you practice the Dhamma in accordance with the Dhamma, there's a story in the text, it's in the commentary, about how the Buddha, after gaining awakening, goes back home. First day back in his hometown, he goes out for alms. His father finds out about this and is really upset. He goes out and he berates the Buddha. No one in our family lineage has ever gone for alms like this. This is disgraceful. And the Buddha tells him, "I no longer belong to that lineage. I belong to the lineage of the noble ones. This is one of their practices. This is one of their customs. growing problems, finding food in a harmless way, taking only the food that people readily give. That's one sense of what it means to follow the customs of the noble ones, the customs that stand outside of the values of society and have a more solid basis in what's really good and really true, not just a cultural basis. The second meaning has to do with the discourse in the canon called the customs of the noble ones, or the family lineage of the noble ones. There's four principles. The first three have to do with contentment. You're content with the food you get, you're content with the clothing you get, you're content with the lodgings you get. As long as they're good enough to practice, they're good enough. You don't struggle to find things that are better. And you're very careful that you don't pride yourself on your contentment. In other words, you don't exalt yourself and disparage others with the idea that you're more content than they are. In other words, you have the proper attitude toward this. You practice contentment as a kind of medicine to treat your, to treat the disease of your greed. You have to show up to others. So you use your material things alive to the dangers of getting attached to them, also alive to the dangers of exalting yourself over not being attached. A very circumspect attitude. Now, knowing the four requisites, you would think that the fourth custom of the noble ones would have to do with medicines, but it doesn't. The first three have to do with contentment. The last one has to do with discontent. The Buddha says you delight in developing and you delight in abandoning. In other words, you delight in developing skillful qualities. You delight in abandoning unskillful qualities. As the Buddha said, the secret to his awakening was to search for what was skillful, which meant he didn't just sit around and be content with the fact that his mind had unskillful qualities. He said, they're there. As he said, you get them out. And the images he uses are not just sitting there watching things arising and then allowing them to pass away on their own. It's like a man whose head is on fire. You put out the fire. The cowherd, whose cows could get into the rice fields, so if they show any tendency to get into the rice fields when the rice is still growing, you beat them back. In other words, you very actively try to figure out why your unskillful qualities, like greed, aversion, delusion, lust, envy, why they have their attractions, why they have their allure. You want to see what sparks them. You want to see how they come and they go. They're not permanent fixtures in the mind. But when they come back, why do you go for them? What's the allure? You have to dig down really deep to find that. Because often we're attracted to things for reasons that we would ordinarily feel embarrassed about. So you try to get rid of unskillful qualities. And then you develop ones that are skillful in their place, like mindfulness and concentration and discernment. When concentration comes, you don't just say, well, here it comes and it's going to go, it's impermanent. When it comes, you try to develop it as far as you can. The same with all the factors of the path. But this is where the discontent comes in. Obviously, you're discontent with the mind when it's filled with unskillful qualities. But even with skillful qualities, the Buddha said, you have to be discontent with them until they take you all the way. This, he said, was the secret to his awakening. Strong, relentless effort. This doesn't mean he was sweating all the time, beating himself up all the time. But there was a persistence. If things were required delicate work, he would do the delicate work. If things required patience, they took time to see and to understand, he would take the time to see and to understand. But constantly working on what could I do to improve the state of my mind. It's this discontent that was what made him noble. So contentment is not a blanket attitude you take toward everything. It's a matter of priorities. You don't give much time to getting material things. You give just enough so that it is enough. You have a very frugal sense of what is required by enough, so you can focus your discontent on what's wrong with the mind. Those are the customs of the noble ones. This is where they overlap with the second aspect of practicing the Dharma in accordance with the Dharma. In the canon, they don't talk so much about practicing the Dharma in accordance with the Dharma, because the Dharma is what they knew. The Buddha just set it out. It had been too much sullied by domesticated attitudes. So when the Buddha is talking about practicing the Dharma in accordance with the Dharma, the main thrust had to do with practicing for the sake of disenchantment, dispassion, release. In other words, you aim high. This is the same principle as being discontent with skillful qualities. You aim high. You don't let domestic attitudes limit your horizons. You don't tell yourself, oh, I can't go very far because I'm a lay person. I can't go very far because I'm a young monk. Or because I'm old, or because I'm too young, whatever. As human beings, we all have a big potential. This is what the Buddha discovered by going outside of his culture. And we can learn that by going outside of our culture, we begin to realize that we can realize that potential. As the Ardha Dhammas, the noble Dhammas, come down to four: virtue, concentration, discernment, release. It's the release that makes the other three noble. Just as the being discontent with your skillful qualities until you get to the level where your skillful qualities get you to release. This is what makes all of these teachings noble. Standing outside the culture of their time, standing outside the culture of our time. It's by following the noble path and aiming at the noble attainments that we become noble as well. That's the message we get from the life of Ajahn Mun, from the life of Ajahn Sawat, and all the great Ajahns, going back to the time of the Buddha. This is possible. Don't sell yourself short.